FSC might come later. The support staff, you're all welcome. I will start this today's meeting with what I hate doing, that is apologizing for rescheduling our study time, because initially we were supposed to start at 10 and I requested that we start at 9 so that we can have enough time for the presentation and clarity on the presentation. But due to the circumstances that we found ourselves in as the ANC caucus and the country, I had to request through the secretariat that please bear with me and request that we start at 9:30. I was at the memorial service of the late Deputy Minister Babeli Lehlongwa, and in her memory and those who have passed on through violent crime, illnesses, and the loved ones, may I request you, honorable members and the team and everybody, to stand up and observe a moment of silence. Thank you. May their souls rest in peace. Once more, members, I really appreciate your understanding for waiting for us to come here. We all have an agenda in front of us, honorable members, we do. Okay, the meeting is officially closed. I'm not going to make a speech and waste time. We have to make sure that we fruitfully and productively use the time that we are having. Also, tomorrow, due to the request or the directive from the president, we have to make sure that we finish by the scheduled time so that we are in the house by 2 o'clock. So for today, I'm going to check with the secretariat, who is not here. The apologies that we have received, Lubabalu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Excuse me. From the committee side, Chairperson, we have 2 apologies from Mr. Okamp and Mr. Dutoit, Chair. And there is also an apology from the DDG of National Treasury, Mr. Mokhajana. Thank you, sir. Okay. The DDG is leading the team, Chairperson, from National Treasury. I am not sure if it will be proper if I can read the apology or enough. Okay, thanks.
I think that's enough. We have 3 apologies. We are hoping those who have not sent apologies will be joining us in due course. I'm now stepping to the 3rd item of the day, briefing by National Treasury on the Special Appropriation Bill, B10-2019. Mr. Anthony Jolis.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to present to the Special Appropriation, on the Special Appropriation for ESCOM. And as you know, that ESCOM is a critical entity for the South African economy. It is critical also to support growth in the South African economy, and it is experiencing significant challenges, both short-term liquidity challenges and structural challenges in terms of its business and operational efficiency. So it is an entity that requires all stakeholders to really be on board. ESCOM, in the past number of years since the crisis in 2009-10, part of the stimulus package that was introduced to deal with the financial crisis globally was to invest significantly in infrastructure, and ESCOM was identified at the time as one of those entities that played a significant role to support infrastructure as a stimulus package post the 2009 crisis, global financial crisis, when globally, internationally, countries were basically themselves injecting a lot of liquidity into their economies to bail out the financial sector. And that was not the requirement, that was not the position that we were in at the time. So what was provided and what was really the source of where we are today with regard to ESCOM is that generally government has provided a number of measures that were introduced specific to ESCOM. 350 billion rand of guarantee. That's the total package. We provided significant equity at the time. We sold Vodacom shares, 23 billion rand was provided. There was a concessional loan that we had as government to ESCOM that was converted into a grant of 60 billion rand. Tariffs was adjusted to meet the to be cost effective and had significant increases in electricity tariffs over a number of years. ESCOM too was required to introduce efficiencies in their business, and an amount of 60 billion over a 5-year period was identified and largely has been achieved, and that was a package of measures. And so what we have seen over the years is an ESCOM that has not been able to deliver, notwithstanding all of the support that has been provided, to deliver in terms of what the funding was intended for. It was intended to deliver infrastructure because it was an infrastructure stimulus package. And so we still have power stations that are still under construction, and there's a long history. So we've not been able to sell the product that is intended to be sold for revenue to be earned to service the debt. So there's no product to be sold, but the debt exists, and so you don't have revenue because you're not selling a product and you have a problem. So you have a structural problem, just the business model. The world in terms of generation and electricity has become a different place. And so ESCOM has become an outdated organization in terms of the a modern sector, energy sector. So it faces that, and it also faces a liquidity. So in terms of the structure and in terms of its ability to service the debt. So that is a solvency risk that it has. It's insolvent, given the debt, and it's also illiquid, doesn't have cash. And that essentially is the problem. And so we have this situation. Now, so that is a bit of the background to talk to why ESCOM is important to the South African economy. It is the sole supplier through the transmission of electricity into the economy. It is not the sole producer, but it is the majority producer of electricity, because we also have the renewable energy producers. So ESCOM is critical, and therefore it is systemic. It is an entity that must be protected, and it must be changed and restructured in order to function efficiently and profitably, because as ESCOM is currently, no investor would want to invest in ESCOM. And investors also not only do their own assessment of ESCOM, they would also get information from rating agencies. Because the rating agencies are also saying that in terms of your willingness and your ability to service your 450 billion rand of debt, there are question marks. Whether you are willing and whether you are able. And that is the key criteria that the rating agency would ask itself in terms of how it rates an entity or how it rates the sovereign. And so there are questions, and therefore it is important to deal with the willingness and the ability to service debt. Now, so we've had a situation where ESCOM, with the debt that has increased, question marks being asked about the willingness and ability, where even early before commitments were entered into between ESCOM and lenders, multilateral financial institutions, international financial institutions, the MDBs, the World Bank, multilateral, the Chinese Development Bank, and others were notwithstanding committed funding, meaning that contracts have been entered into that money must flow when these lenders are not seeing a structural change in the entity happening following announcements made by government, then they start questioning whether the willingness and ability of these entities, or ESCOM in particular, is likely to change, and therefore would come up with all kinds of reasons not to follow through on those commitments, which is what has happened. When the Minister of Finance announced in February that ESCOM would require more funding, and so now I'm on slide ESCOM on slide, no numbers on the slide, number slide 6. Okay, go to slide 6. So in February the Minister of Finance said that ESCOM will be required, will be requiring more funding, 223 billion per annum over 10 years, 230 billion nominal, that's the amount. And so the that amount was not budgeted for. It was, this is the intention in February when the announcement was made, is that we'll go through a special appropriation, so that by the time it gets to October, we will do a special appropriation for the 23 billion in year one in 2019-20. What subsequently happened is that when lenders now became or felt, given their own assessment, that they will be holding back on funding, that stage is a problem because they are debt obligations that need to be honored, and this debt is guaranteed by government. So when you fail to honor a debt, when you thought in February that there are commitments entered into, contracts entered into, and therefore the upcoming commitments will be honored, when that fails to happen, government needs to intervene. Because you trigger a default on one, it triggers default on all of your debts, and you could not have a situation where that happens. And therefore, we needed to find funding earlier than we thought. This is where the Section 16 then came in, and that needed to be accelerated to, in order to draw on the 23 billion that was committed in for 2019. So Section 16 was approved, and that then amounted, because there's a certain formula that you use when you introduce Section 16, it's a certain percent of government expenditure for that particular year, and it amounted to 17.652 billion, which is an amount that can be transferred through the approval of Section 16. Well, and an amount that is now being disbursed of that 17.652 billion is 13 billion to date. 13.5 billion to date has been paid to ESCOM, and the remaining 4.1 billion is being disbursed in line with ESCOM's cash flow requirements. And then there is a remaining amount between the 17 and 23 billion, and that will be disbursed from the contingency reserve. So the contingency reserve is what was approved in February. It is a funded contingency reserve, but it was not specified how and where that the funding would be allocated. But here it is now made clear that to get to the 23 billion, there will be that utilization of the contingency reserve under the 2019 Appropriation Act. And that was done. And so as part of this funding to ESCOM, the shareholder, Department of Public Enterprises, and the Treasury, continue to work very closely with the ESCOM Treasury and ESCOM officials as well, in order to ensure that when we're working with ESCOM Treasury, we're working to ensure that we can meet the cash flow requirement, because that is important as an immediate requirement in order to ensure that when there is a commitment that is falling due, that we, ESCOM, has the cash to honor those commitments. So the special appropriation then in June after the election, it became very clear that more funding will be required. More funding will be required for ESCOM because of the cash flow and the commitment lying committed for, right, over the period ahead. And when the Auditor General, when the Auditor General looks at the finances, it needs assurance that ESCOM is able to meet future funding commitments up to a period of 12 to 18 months. That is what the Auditor General wants to see. And so when the Auditor General looked at ESCOM's balance sheet, it realized that given the commitments, now part of the commitments in the 12 to 18 month period is a lot of the debt that is now maturing, that was entered into in 2009. Now you can see the link. 2009-10 is when we said, ESCOM, we are giving you guarantees, you can go and raise debt. It raised debt, but because of the crisis globally, the maturity of debt that ESCOM was able to raise then was a 10-year maturity. So in 2009, ESCOM raised 10-year debt that is essentially maturing in 2019. And then when it's raised again in 2010, there is again debt maturing in 2020. Because so this is a period where there is significant ESCOM debt maturing that needs to be honored. And if you as an entity are not able, because your revenue is inadequate, this is where government needed to step in. And this is what happened. And so government then said, based on what was said in February, we will now bring forward the 230 billion that was committed and front load that amount of money. And so the president announced in the special appropriation bill that special appropriation will be tabled by the minister to propose an allocation of significant portion of the 230 billion to be brought forward. And he said, the president said, that this was also necessary because ESCOM is too vital to our economy to be allowed to fail. And then on the 19th of June, Cabinet approved additional funding. This is now additional to what was said. Because this is now, but it still links to the 230 billion over 10 years. It is additional in order to bring forward money that is still part of the 230 billion or 23 billion per annum over 10 years. And so that's additional funding allocation to assist the company. And for this purpose, on the 23rd of July 2019, the ministers tabled in Parliament a special appropriation. So this special appropriation is now what is in addition required for 2019-20. So you're ready to utilize the 23, but you need, in addition to the 23, you need the special appropriation. But bringing forward the 23 billion per annum over 10 years is being brought forward. So you are bringing the 23 plan for next year, bring that, and the third year, and you are bringing forward. So it's all linked. So what was done is that the special appropriation therefore proposed the following financial support to ESCOM, an additional 26 billion, right, in 1920. So when ESCOM was given 23 billion, it is given an additional 26 billion for 2019-20. And then when ESCOM initially was given a 23 billion allocation for 2020-21, it will now not be 23 billion, it will be 33 billion. That is the additional 33 billion. It is not in addition to 23 billion in 2020. I just want to make that very clear. So remember, there is no, when we appropriate, you only appropriate annually. So you don't, you can't appropriate for a second year and a third year. You only appropriate annually. So we needed in any event to still appropriate, even when we made a commitment of 23 billion per annum over 10 years, it was still a requirement for the 2020 budget to appropriate. Because by having announced in the budget that it's not an appropriation for 2020, you can only appropriate for 2021 for the year. So what is being said here is that a 33 billion is part of the special appropriation for 2020-21. So 2020-21 is, that is all that is on the record for, I don't make this clear, for 2021. The only way that an additional amount can be provided for 2021 is when the minister announces either in October, well, that's also not an appropriation because it's only when the budget is presented for 2021 that amount can be increased. But as we stand and as we discuss today, the amount allocated for 2020-21 is 33 billion. Now, why is it that needs to be announced now? And that could be the question, because the question could be, why did you not just wait for February next year to announce the 33 billion? Now, that is why it was important to satisfy the audit, the AG. The AG, in order to sign off the account of ESCOM as a going concern, needed the assurance that in the next 12 to 18 months, there's funding available for ESCOM to meet its obligation for the next 12 to 18 months. And so the 33 billion for 2020 is part of that 18-month period, so it then became necessary to state very clearly that ESCOM will be getting 33 billion in 2020 and 26 billion in 2019-20, and together, given ESCOM's own revenue, together that is an amount that satisfies the AG, and on that basis ESCOM, or the AG, was in a position to approve the financials of ESCOM as a going concern. And this one financial was released on that basis. And so the total financial support, however, the financial support is based on ESCOM's ability to execute its funding plan, the 46 billion, and so we needed that. And not just the funding plan, and then there's also, I'm sure the funding plan is just funding, and then there's also maturity that before you reach outside of that amount. So it needed to meet not only that funding, but also maturing debt. And so, as I mentioned, failure to execute this funding plan that started Eskom experiencing liquidity shortfalls at the end of the financial year. Then there is part of what was required of Eskom, given this package support, is that Eskom must become a more efficient organization. And therefore the restructuring and the structural reforms and the need for a restructuring officer to lead such a process, and subsequently the head. And that's why we're making a distinction between a chief restructuring officer and a chief restructuring office. So there will be a chief restructuring office of which the head is the chief restructuring officer, but it will not just be one individual. So you have the head of the office is the Mr. Freeman Nombalo, who was at some point also a deputy director general, the accountant general, and he has been appointed. And the CRO is responsible for developing the financial turnaround of Eskom. Various options have been provided. They have been discussed also in cabinet, and it's a decision that cabinet and government need to take. But that is part of what the chief restructuring officer and office has been tasked to identify the best financial turnaround plan for Eskom, given the 450 billion rand of debt, taking into account the interests of the shareholder, the interests of labor, the interest of lenders, because there are many, these are all owned by lenders, the interest of the community, how it impacts tariffs, going forward adjustments, and so it is a multi-pronged process that will be detailed in the special paper that will be released by the shareholder department, which is public Department of Public Enterprises, in September, the special paper will be released in September on Eskom. Right? Do you want to give more detail? But the paper seeks to outline the roadmap, more details on the transformation of Eskom, clarity on measures that government will implement to resolve Eskom's financial challenges, and also the interest of the rating agencies, because it's very key. At some point, Eskom was rated above the sovereign, and now it is a drain on the sovereign rating. And part of the information that must be contained in the special paper is to consolidate outcomes of various processes, many processes underway within government, the task team, voted by the president, so there are all these processes. These need to be consolidated, and that is what the chief instruction officer is also tasked to do, and to provide clarity on the reform. And clarity is very important, because the clarity that's not there at the moment, and this is why everyone is very concerned, whether the lenders and the rating agencies, because without clarity, it makes it very difficult to express an opinion as a sovereign, as a rating agency, or as a lender even, to roll debt or to provide additional debt if there is no clarity. So that becomes very important on the reforms to implement in the sector, because Eskom is not only an entity, an Eskom issue, it's also an energy issue, because Eskom is so critical to the sector. So you got to understand how all the role players would be working and be synergizing, the synergy that's required for all role players in order to ensure that the sector functions and that Eskom as well, it becomes a sustainable, profitable entity and the sustainability of electricity, because then it talks to the future growth outcomes that one would want to see for the economy, if the sector is a sustainable sector. And therefore, in conclusion, government's ability to structure ESCOM, manage its finances, reduce its reliance on fiscal support, and at the same time, to ensure that energy security to the country is there, because economic growth depends on that, and that if the sovereign is also able to maintain its ratings now, because the current burden of ESCOM on the sovereign is what is likely to trigger a downgrade on the sovereign. And when you have a downgrade of the sovereign, then automatically the ESCOM debt guaranteed by the sovereign also becomes of poorer quality. And if, when that happens, it is not just ESCOM refinancing of its 440 billion that will be more costly, but even new debt with a weaker backing by the sovereign would also result in higher debt and therefore a bigger burden on the ability to fund as ESCOM, but also a bigger burden on the sovereign to fund its own financing and deficit of the budget, government budget, which is around almost 300 billion. That is just the government borrowing every year. So every year, every month, you can divide that by 12 and you can divide it by 48 weeks to know. And there's refinancing of that debt because our treasury bill alone is about 10 billion every week. That's just refinancing your 1 year debt. Now you have 3, 6, 12, and then you have debt maturing. So it will result in ESCOM, a downgrade, increasing its interest bill will increase, and government interest bill will increase when you have the status, and there's no improvement in the status quo, when already the interest bill of government is the fastest growing item on budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Julius. Members, I think we can all understand the importance of today's meeting. Hence, we wanted to have this opportunity with Treasury, because we have been speaking about the pronouncement by the President during SONA, what the Department of Public Enterprise is saying, what is ESCOM saying. But today we are speaking to Treasury and we have to understand. And unfortunately, I'm one of those who's not a financial person. And I want to be sure when that comes, when we take a decision of what kind of an animal are we talking about. With that having been said, members, I will request that you allow me to request Mr. Julius to please, I don't remember the slide, where you're talking about the 230 billion rands, that is over 3 years, the breakdown. Those tables, can you please just break it down so that we understand? Because to me there was a confusion that there was the 17 billion that has been used, but you talk about the 23 billion. Let me check my notes. Okay. So I just want you to be slow and come to our level so that we understand that. The other thing that you should emphasize, I think we should know that we are only dealing, appropriating an annual thing, a financial year budget, not what has been pronounced. Come the next financial year, we'll be processing the relevant amount that will be needed. But I just want to request you to come to our level, that breakdown, that understanding, because it's a bit confusing. When you check your slide 7, you talk about in the slide it talks about 13.5 billion that has been transferred to ESCOM. Is the 13.5 billion of the 17 under section 16 of the PFMA, and there's this remaining 4.1 billion of the 17 which was not used. And when I recall our interactions, is that the reason, because we wanted to know the reason, why was it not used, because there are serious problems in. So, let me just finish with this clarities so that we all understand. I don't know, maybe I'm the only one who's confused by this. That is because some conditions were not met or what, I don't know. There's also another bullet point that says remaining part of 23 billion may be dispersed from contingency reserve. So this remaining, just clarify what is remaining from what actually, what are we dealing about, what, because there are too many remainings here. And you are taking me back to VET when I was in class and doing statistics. I was so frustrated. And fortunately, Basti, I passed statistics to my surprise.
No, I got an E for math. And they passed me because they didn't want me to come back.
So I just need to help members. Mm-hmm. And members, if you want something to be clarified before we go to actual engagement, you can ask whatever you want to be clarified. Honorable Yunis?
Yeah, I think it's very good what you're doing. Because you see, firstly, it's not our job. We're not technical experts. We're not finance. It's not our job to simplify things. We are politicians. If National Treasury and DPE and all fail, the problem's there. They must go and come back and write and explain things simply to us. So I don't think we need to be apologetic for anything. When you say, Comrade Chair, that you don't, you're not a financial person.
Nor am I. I chaired that committee for 5 years, and I'm stuck chairing it now, but I'm not a financial person. So I agree with you. In fact, I also find it slightly bold. Secondly, what you've done here is you have actually communicated that the NCOP won't be a rubber stamp, not under this chairperson. So we're getting a briefing, even though the bill has yet to be voted on the other side. I hope Dennis is listening, right? And tomorrow she's even put, the team has even put on the program deliberate. I think what they mean is consider the bill, or the policy issues. We can't deliberate on a bill until it comes, you know, from the NA side, and then obviously some changes at least. So I really welcome this, Comrade Chair. I also welcome that we are slowing things down because we can't be taken for granted. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ryder. Let's reserve the other engagements, no?
Sure, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Yes, I just firstly want to congratulate Eunice on his haircut. overdue, but most welcome. No, it looks good. Chair, yes, I think it's important, and I want to agree with what you're requesting, and I'd like to ask Treasury, please. You're referring to a number of issues throughout, and there's a lot of questions already, so I'm glad we've got a lot of time. But what we keep getting is a little bit of a snapshot. It's almost like reading Helen Ziller's tweets. If you only look at one, it gives you an impression, but we've actually got to look at the whole picture to get a proper understanding of what's being said. So the request is as well, if we can get an understanding of the trajectory of debt to where we've got to now, and then in terms of the repayments, what needs to happen? So if we throw $59 billion at the problem today, I've taken cognizance of the last bullet point on slide 9, which scared the life out of me. failure to execute the funding plan may result in Eskom experiencing liquidity shortfalls as of 31 March 2020 and require additional funding in addition to funding provided through the special appropriation bill. I almost see that as you sending me an early warning signal. Okay, so I think we need to understand the trajectory to where we've got to now and then to where we're going. What is our final outcome? You speak about a funding plan. Does that mean that Eskom's going to be raising more debt to pay off the debt? That's what I read into funding plan. If you can tell us what is Eskom going to do, what's it going to look like going forward? That's the bottom line. If you can just give us some idea of where we are and what our intervention now is going to achieve. Thank you.
Okay. My request is that start from the 2009 60 billion, if you can start there so that you can follow. Thank you.
Start the 2009.
You have said something about the government giving 60 billion to Eskom in 2009. So that's where problem started. So we just want to have an understanding of, you know, the activities, what happened.
So thank you, Chan. Thanks for the question. Why is it necessary to provide that information, background information, on 2009, is to say that at the time it was in fact the right thing to do. The decision was that what we would do as government is to have a stimulus package to deal with a global crisis. We introduced what is termed counter-cyclical fiscal policy. So when you had a crisis, when you want to now grow the economy as a result of a global crisis, you have the ability to do that because to grow there is an equation that we use to that equals growth, right? Growth is about in expenditure, is government expenditure, is private sector investment, and it's consumption expenditure, G plus I plus C plus what you export because money comes in, minus what you import because money goes out. That is the GDP. That is growth. So I'm saying G is government, I is investment, C is consumption, exports, minus imports. That is the growth. What we said to grow now, when you have a global crisis, so this global is not part of the G. The G was government in my equation. Government will spend. Because when government spends and it is able to spend, you will have a higher GDP. Is that making sense? And government spent on specifically on infrastructure. And the infrastructure was both government infrastructure, social infrastructure, building schools, building hospitals, building, clinics and et cetera, and roads. That was part of, so you saw in 2009-10, government's own expenditure increased and was targeting infrastructure. But in addition, government also then said, and we will also provide guarantees for infrastructure spent. It's part of the stimulus to stimulate the economy. I hope everyone's still following. And there's a question, Mr. Ryder.
Mr. Ryder, Honorable Ryder, hope you don't mind.
Sorry to interrupt. It would just help us a lot if you could understand. And what was the debt at that time? And thumbs up, I mean, to the closest 100 billion, you know.
Oh, ESCOM's debt at the time, but maybe you can recall, government's debt was 23% of GDP. It is now 50% of GDP. This is just government. ESCOM's debt was
40 billion
rand at the time. It is now additional 400 billion. Okay. So, the reason I mentioned that counter-cyclical policy was that this was what government had appetite for at the time. It could, because the debt was low. We in fact had a small surplus in 2009 in government, and which means we were in fact bringing down our debt. And so that is where what triggered the counter-cyclical. So this debt was, we raised it very deliberately. So what we have today was, in terms of debt, is the outcome of a very deliberate counter-cyclical fiscal policy strategy. But what we did not anticipate is that whilst we committed to be raising debt, both as government and as ESCOM in this case, we did not anticipate that year after year after year, the economy would underperform. So we had an underperforming economy. Now, when that, and we can go into the reasons, but that is what happened, underperforming. Now when you underperform on your growth, you're also underperforming on your revenue. Because your revenue that you're able to raise through taxes is linked to the performance of the economy. Everyone, that makes sense? The revenue that you are projecting when you present your budget is based on a growth estimate. So when we then do an adjustment in October, we now realize that it's only twice a year that we forecast growth officially as government. Private sector have the luxury to do their forecast more regularly. So when we then present our forecast in October, this is what happened since 2009 when we were underperforming. We now projected lower growth and lower revenue. Now what you cannot do is now revise your expenditure because you have committed to spend for the year. Your revenue underperforms. When your revenue underperforms and you still need to finance the expenditure, you borrow more. I just want to make sure we understand. We borrow more because your financing can only come from taxes or from borrowing. So when your taxes underperform because your growth is underperforming, you cannot adjust your expenditure because you have appropriated your expenditure. You have to spend. You then must borrow to finance your appropriated expenditure as government. And therefore government debt starts growing because of additional borrowing to finance your expenditure. For ESCOM, when the economy underperforms, the demand for electricity falls, drops, one factor that reduces the demand for the product that must generate revenue for ESCOM. Because by selling electricity, that is how it gets its revenue, main source of revenue. And it's the same revenue that must finance the operational expenditure and must of ESCOM and must service the debt. And so I just want to make sure you, when I mention that, when you're starting from 60 billion, why are we where we are today? We are today with an ESCOM of 450 billion. That had 40 billion then, but it raised a lot of borrowing. The intention was that the Eskom would be selling electricity to service that. But it could not because there was no demand. But what?
While you are still on the 50 billion, because in 2009 you were said to be a guarantee to Eskom, and will I be correct, if I'm correct or correctly, that this money was converted into equity of share? Just clarify that, if I'm correct.
So, there was a loan from government to Eskom. We had an asset. Because it's a loan, Eskom owes us. Eskom gets the money, but it must service that money. It must pay back. So we will be expecting from the loan now interest coming to government. So we as part of our revenue. Because they get the money, and we will get interest year after year after year. Interest. What the conversion from a loan to a grant meant was Eskom no longer is required to pay interest. They didn't have the 60 billion. They no longer need to service 60 billion. So we are not now giving them more money. It's just that they don't need to service the money they already was given. So they know we don't have an asset of a loan to Eskom on our balance sheet. But it's not an asset. They must service this asset. But now we remove the asset because we are not getting interest. That is what was done with the conversion from a loan to a grant. So the 60 billion becomes a grant now. It's an allocation. It's just by saying you no longer need to service the debt. We're not transferring another 60 billion. We already gave the 60 billion and we recorded an asset on government balance sheet. Eskom recorded the liability on their balance sheet that they have 60 billion. It was a concessional loan, so it was equity, but we call it a concessional loan, it was treated as equity because it was concessional. It was very cheap, the interest that they needed to pay, and it was interpreted as equity by the rating agency. But it was still a loan, but it wasn't us, it was a very concessional, I don't know if I'm saying concessional means, very soft terms. That they did not need to service, I think, the first year or 2 years and only start servicing, things like that, makes it concessional. Even the rate was not, but it was still money that needed to be paid. It was still recorded as an asset on government.
Having received that explanation, we appreciate that. I think now we are getting to our level. We are meeting each other. You are also coming to our level. Thanks for the explanation. It will make it better for us to interpret and understand what we are dealing with. Members, I'm going to give you numbers, if you don't mind, to get into the deliberation first. Questions for clarity? Oh, you're still on?
I couldn't explain the
okay.
Section 16
yeah.
Chair.
Okay, sorry. Part of my question. Yes.
Chair, thank you very much. I think just for my, how I capture it is in terms of Eskom was given 60 billion and that was converted to a grant. Then at the time, if I captured correctly, is that the depth of Eskom was 40 billion. And then today it's 450.
My colleagues are coming. In February, when the minister announced that Eskom would be requiring funding, more funding than all of this that was mentioned before, that now Eskom would be requiring 23 billion per year for the next 10 years. So I'm going to start with that. That was the announcement by the Minister of Finance. in February this year, 23 billion. So we must just keep in mind 23 billion for this year, and again 23 billion next year, and so on for the next 10 years, which is the financial year. That in nominal amounts of 206 billion, 23 times 10. That was in February. When the minister made that announcement, it was not in the appropriation in the budget for 2019-20. There was no appropriation of 23 billion in 1920. The minister just made the announcement in the budget speech. So what the minister had in mind to legalize 23 billion for 2019-20 was that 23 billion would only be required after October. And so you could then still go to October of this year and do a special an appropriation, yeah, of the budget. So you're doing an adjustment of the budget for 23 billion, that would now be an additional 23 billion for 1920. I hope that's clear. In February as well, the minister also, not linked to ESCOM, but linked to the contingency reserve. We always need, just for unforeseen and unavoidable, we put an amount of money into a contingency reserve. This contingency reserve in February is a funded contingency. So it was part of what was appropriated. Money was approved for the contingency reserve in February of that process. Now, post the February budget, and with the uncertainty regarding ESCOM's finances and the announcement that they would be unbundling, and ESCOM would be unbundled into different entities, generation, transmission, distribution, but details would follow. Everyone, all the lenders, remember the debt is already on ESCOM's balance sheet, and lenders are expected to be getting their money back. Because the debt must be serviced, there's interest that falls due. ESCOM lenders, in the absence of now really understanding what this unbundling means for a lender, because when I loan money to you, ESCOM, I didn't see three entities. I just saw ESCOM. And I'm expecting ESCOM to pay me back, not three entities now that we are talking unbundling. So we want to know exactly what, I'm now saying this is what lenders would be thinking in there, who have loaned money, 400 billion. Who will be paying back my money? The three separate entities, and yes, it's guaranteed by government. So also government is not clear what it means by unbundling, but government is the one who has guaranteed this debt, and lenders is now not asking ESCOM because they understand when you are talking unbundling, that is government who must lead that process. And government is not coming out clear what it is that we mean by three separate entities. And so in the absence of clarity, notwithstanding committed funding where ESCOM has entered into contractual arrangements with lenders for funds to flow into ESCOM to service its debt, with no clarity, lenders were now becoming jittery they were becoming concerned and reluctant to transfer funding to ESCOM even when contracts were entered into, commitments were entered into. Am I making sense? So when subsequent to the budget, some lenders were now not transferring funds to ESCOM, that at the time of the budget, the view was that ESCOM will be getting funding given committed arrangement to meet debt that was falling due. It now did not get the funding that it required to meet the debt that was falling due. The question then, what do you do? You can't allow ESCOM to default when debt falls due. You must either pay interest or there's a maturity, you must settle the principal or whatever, but that is what is required, was required, and lenders who have now entered into contractual arrangements for money to, are not transferring ESCOM to a liquidity problem because it cannot not honor its obligation. And government is the guarantor that guarantees that debt, which means in the event that ESCOM is not in a position to service its debt, government will step in. That's what the guarantee means. So government has that obligation with the guarantee. Right. And now being informed by the shareholder and by ESCOM that we are unable to service our debt falling due, government needed to say, well, in that case, we have to step in. We know we were planning to issue, to do an adjustment in October, but we have to bring that 23 billion forward. Now, the only way you can bring money forward or transfer is through the section 16. Okay. Is there anything, is it clear? We had to introduce the section 16 in order to transfer money very quickly because you didn't want ESCOM defaulting. Section 16 is very clear on what amount can be transferred annually. There's a formula for a section 16. And it is a calculation of 0.02% of total expenditure of government. That's it. So you do that calculation, and that calculation gives you an amount, because the numbers are very clear, and that is how you arrive at the 17.652 billion. Section 16, then, when you apply that to the expenditure, allows the government to transfer money immediately, once it's approved, immediately to ESCOM. That's where the 17.652 comes in. Remember, 23 billion is what we were going to do for 2019. We are now saying we can now do 17.652 billion through Section 16. But you don't want to just, because ESCOM needed money, give the full amount. You want to give the amount that is required by ESCOM because it needs to pay lenders. So what was to date of the 17.652 billion that Section 16 allows, government was only transferring of that amount money as and when ESCOM needed the money to meet its obligations, to settle its debt and to pay the interest Because you're not going to give money when ESCOM is not requiring that money, because it is very specific to service the debt that is guaranteed by government. So to date, the amount that has been required of the 17 is 13.5 billion. 13.5 billion has been transferred. Of the 17.652 billion, therefore, what remains? The approval is still there. The Section 16 still allows government to transfer the money. It's just we've imposed a condition you will not transfer money when it's not needed. But the 17.652 has been approved through Section 16, so we can still transfer that money. So you don't need to appropriate or do anything on that. That's already done. So 4.1 billion is what remains of Section 16. That is, and so you can still do that as and when ESCOM needs that money. But remember, this is part of 23 billion. So they will still, but we don't want to give it when they don't, but they will be getting 23 billion. You know we will get 23 from what was said in February. Is it clear? Now, then they still remain. So 4.1 billion can still be transferred. There still remains the difference between 23 billion and 17.652 billion, which is Section 16. Section 16 only allows the 17.652 billion. Now you can do that calculation. It comes to about almost 6 billion, right? 5.3 billion is not catered for by Section 16. But it is part of what government committed to do in February to get to 23 billion. Because government committed to allocate just the budget for 23 billion. So you still have 5.3 billion in addition to the 7th left, if that is clear. So that's how you get to the 5.3 billion. 5.3 billion still required. Either you do an adjustment now, because we were going to do an adjustment in October for 23 billion. But because money is needed, the decision was we will take that money now from the contingency reserve. The contingency reserve has an amount of money in it, but it was enough. It's already funded. Am I clear? The contingency reserve is already funded. So we are now taking 5.3 from the contingency reserve. That deals with the 23 billion. The Section 16 and the contingency reserve give 23 billion. Is it clear? Now the president then realizes after the SONA that I just want to make sure the 23 billion is not dealt with. More money is needed. More money. We must now bring. So remember, this is only the 23 billion that's meant for 1920. But there's still money that we said we will do in year 2 and year 3 up to 10. Now, year 2, we say, ESCOM needs money now. So we will bring forward money planned for year 2 and year 3. Now, it doesn't really have to say it is for year 2. It is of the 230 billion left after 23 billion. So 230 minus 23, right? Which is for year 2, year 3. Of that amount, we are now front-loading to 2019-20. So what are we front-loading? We are now front-loading an additional 26. So even the second year of 23 is not enough. So you must actually step into the third year. But that's why it doesn't have to think it's next year and the year. It's all part of the remaining of the next 10 years. You're not going to go beyond that number. But it's just being brought forward. So 26 billion is what is then included in the allocation additional to 23 for 2019-20, 26 billion. But because the 26 billion was not enough for the Auditor General, the Auditor General said, well, the 26 billion only takes you for 2019-20, we need to know you will also get money now for 2020-21, because they want to sign off the financials as a going concern on the basis that ESCOM is able to service its obligations for the next 12 to 18 months. That takes you into 2020-21, but they want to know that now. You can't wait for February next year, which was what was the idea. And therefore, we included now in the special appropriation that was appropriate for the 26 billion additional this year. We also then said, now we also want for 2020, 33 billion. Now, if you put those amounts, that is the amount that gave comfort to the AG that allowed ESCOM to chair and the board to sign the financials as a going concern. So the 33 is what is now the amount that will be given to ESCOM in 2020. It's almost like now you bring in the budget of 2024 already. Part of 2020's budget is already given. So we were already in the special appropriation, you're actually saying, but part of 2020's budget that is normally announced in February, 33 billion is already committed for ESCOM. As we stand, we're not expecting more for ESCOM, unless something happens. Even for 2020, we're not expecting a new announcement in 2020 for ESCOM. So you are left with the 26 additional plus 33 for next year. I don't know, that is what I need to explain ESCOM's allocation. I hope I explained everything. Now the funding, Mr. Ryder, Martin, I don't know if you add 59 billion, what is that to ESCOM, maybe, you know, because the treasurer, just in terms of what it does to ESCOM's book, as the debt of ESCOM, but just to understand, every year there is always a funding plan. So you know, you shouldn't be scared of a funding plan. A funding plan means that you always have a situation, unless you have a primary, you have a primary surplus, and your tax revenue can service all your expenditure, including your debt service. Then you don't need the funding because your taxes now services your expenditure, including your interest bill. But as long as your revenue is not fully financing your expenditure, you have to have a funding plan. Now, in ESCOM situation, because they also have a BILS program, so it's not only existing debt, because part of the financing is you must say very clearly how you will service maturing debt, existing debt. That's part of a funding plan. But in addition, you are also finishing Medupi and Kusili and new maintenance and you have transmission. So you also will be adding. You have a committed capital expenditure program that will be funded through borrowing. Therefore, you must incorporate into your funding plan how you will do that. How will you be raising your funding, your finance to finance your operational, your plan. So you have a corporate plan for the year. The corporate plan will say, I have these expenditures. And my revenue is only earnings before interest, EBITDA is about 35 billion, but I've got an expenditure of 80 billion. So the difference between my expenditure of 80 billion and my revenue of 35 billion you must tell me very clearly in your funding plan, this is how I will raise that difference. That's the funding plan. So you have a funding plan every year. So you shouldn't, when you said you're scared, when you see it, there will be a funding plan. The funding plan is to actually make it very clear. And it's good for investors because investors then see in advance exactly what the ESCOM's funding plan is. How it will be raising, how much in foreign currency, how much in local currency, how much in the open in the capital market. You know, that's a funding plan. How much in inflation-linked debt, how much in fixed income debt, how much in foreign dollars, you know, I'm just giving you. So that's all included in the funding so that it is clear for investors for the next year, ESCOM has this funding plan and it gives the investors comfort that, and they can monitor throughout the year how successfully this funding plan is being executed because it gives investors the comfort that it is raising money, it is able to raise, so they can look at what the cost of that debt is, etc., and monitor the actual execution of the funding plan. So I just wanted to, but on the exact, so Jackie and Ramesh?
But I'm going to allow it because it's very important. Just introduce yourself as you're speaking.
It's Jackie from Public Enterprises Chair. I just wanted to clarify in terms of what the $59 billion that the committee was actually referring to so that we are all clear. The $59 billion is intended to assist ESCOM as a going concern for the auditors to sign on its financials. So the $59 billion is to make sure that for the next 18 months, the entity is a going concern. That's where the $59 billion is actually amounting to.
Okay, thanks, Chair. You know, I think just to add, you know, as well to what Mr. Julius and Ms. Monisane has also added, just to also highlight to the, you know, to the Honourable Ryder as well, because he raised a question around the risk of what happens by the end of March 2020. So basically, if you look at the last bullet points, which is bold, basically, in terms of ESCOM's funding plan, and here the risk is obviously, should ESCOM not be in a position to raise the full amount in its funding plan of $46 billion, there is a risk that then they will probably need additional funding. So we just want to highlight that fact because obviously to date they've raised 58% of the $46 billion. But obviously there's a risk that they may not be able to raise that full $46 billion. Then what happens next? Obviously if they cannot raise that funding, it will mean that government will probably have to step in. But I think also what's important for the lenders to actually honor, you know, or to assist ESCOM in terms of, you know, advancing further lending is the fact around what is happening with ESCOM in terms of the restructuring process. I think that's very important because at the moment, obviously, the lenders are quite concerned, and as has been highlighted as well, in terms of what is the future roadmap of ESCOM. What are the funding plans for ESCOM? What is the role of the CRO, as has been highlighted in the presentation, in terms of what are we doing with ESCOM's debt that has ballooned from $40 billion to $440 billion, because at the moment as it stands, you know, ESCOM cannot service that debt on its own. So I think we just want to highlight that risk, and I think the DG also highlighted this risk in his presentation to SCOA a few weeks ago, to point out the fact that if ESCOM is not in a position to actually honor its funding plan, there is a possibility that ESCOM may need more additional funding than that announced in terms of this process, in terms of the special appropriation process. So I think, you know, I think it's important to highlight that obviously we do have daily calls with the team, with ESCOM team, in terms of just understanding on a daily basis how are you looking, you know, in terms of managing its cash flow on a daily basis. So what we're seeing is that, you know, for the next few months they seem to be fairly okay in terms of, you know, debt, you know, servicing its costs. So that's why in terms of the special, in terms of the Section 16, there's still that $4 billion that's available that we can still advance to ESCOM. And obviously they are in the process of getting additional funding you know, from DFIs and so forth. That should keep them going for the next 2 or 3 months while this process of the special appropriation bill unfolds. But it's very important that we want to highlight the risk of the funding plan. If ESCOM is not able to raise the full $46 billion, there's a possibility that they will come back to the fiscus for additional funding. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Now I'm going to allow members to engage with the presentation. Honorable Ryder, who else? Afterthoughts are also allowed. Honorable Mulesani. I used to work with Mrs. Mulesani. I don't know why I always forget your surname. Okay, fine. For now, Honorable Jan. Ida.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the team from Treasury for the presentation. There's lots of questions. Okay, so please be patient with me. Some of them might have been explained already, but it's just I'm trying to get my head around it. Okay, so fortunately we've answered the first three already through parts of the presentation and the explanations that have come forward. There's a couple of comments that I want to make, but I think those are more political than anything else, so I'm going to ignore those for now because I think it's past time for politics, and now we're looking at saving Eskom and the economy. So if we can first of all just look at slide 7. You refer to the contingency reserve, remaining part of the $23 billion may be disbursed from the contingency reserve. I want to ask if that's legal, because I think that the contingency reserve has certain conditions around it, and I just want to ask if that is legal in terms of your reading of the law. Then I want to go back to this issue of the funding plan and just ask, okay, so the $46 billion, 58% has already been secured. That's another funding mix of that, more or less. You know, does that include consumption collection, so collection for services? Or is it $46 billion that needs to be raised purely out of external funding? I'm really worried about it because I see that liquidity shortfalls at 31st of March. So obviously, in terms of your cash flow projections, you're looking at 31 March 2020 being when this problem is going to come about. And that's in the current financial year, if I'm not mistaken. Having a look at special appropriations, contingency funds being raided or used, etc., etc. You know, what are the options going to be left to us then? Because as far as I know, we're going to have run out of options at that stage, and there's not going to be any piggy banks that we left to break open. What are the options if that does come about? Also on slide 9, that same slide a little bit higher up, you spoke about National Treasury's developing conditions to be imposed before and after transfers are made to ESCOM. The conditions of the loan, I think, are massively important, and I've made this point several times before. These conditions are massively important. And again, I'm talking about the debt trajectory, and I want to understand. So historically, you've explained to us that in 2009 we were sitting at a 40 billion rand debt, which was easily manageable, and probably too little, which is why we had load shedding in 2007-2008, and President Thabo Mbeki came out and said that yes, government had made an error, there hadn't been sufficient investment, and that's what gave rise to the 2009 stimulus package. So the transition from 40 billion to 450 billion, and depending on who you read, because I've seen numbers of 500 billion in the last week in the press as well. So that 410 billion rand, what is, do we know where it's been spent on? So I don't want to go down a whole kind of dissection of the thing, but obviously there's been no value for money, and I think that the Minister Gordhan was quite open last week and said, look, this has been state capture. Understandably, a lot of money has been pilfered from that. I don't think we need to dissect that in depth, but in terms of how Eskom is operating at the moment, I understand that there's a restructure happening, but EBITDA is still positive. And that indicates that without the debt impact, Eskom has potential to get its way out of here. But this is specifically why I'm trying to work out the trajectory of debt from where it arose. Okay, it started in 2009, and it's gotten to a stage where we're in serious trouble now. The repayments going forward and getting us out of this hole. When are we going to get to a level where Eskom is sustainable beyond EBITDA? Okay, so that they actually are at a stage where they can pay their debt, etc., etc. Now I know that the number of 200 billion being sustainable debt was thrown at us last week. I'm not sure that I agree with that number, but in terms of the trajectory, when are we going to get there, and are we going to get there? I note that you've made comments about the turnaround and the fact that plan is going to come through in September, so I'm not going to pressure you on that. I do, however, want to just get a comment in terms of the procurement from Eskom. Are they getting value for money in terms of all of their procurement going forward? And I think that an audit of all of their procurement contracts is important. I just want to hear, you know, how urgently can National Treasury intervene, or will National Treasury intervene in terms of making sure that there's value for money coming into Eskom, so that we can get value for money for the money that we're putting into Eskom. Chair, that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get a comment on that slide number 10. It was highlighted that Mr. Nomvalo was appointed as the Chief Restructuring Officer. And there is a Chief Restructuring Officer, if I did follow the presentation very well. So I just want to check on that one, Murray. Are we not putting the Eskom into more debts by duplicating? Couldn't the Chief Restructuring Officer, was he or her not capable of doing what is going to be the, to be done by the Chief Restructuring Officer by coming up with that turnaround structure? Thank you.
Honorable Chairman.
Chair, thank you very much, members. Chair, my question is on the funding plan, the measures. Are there any measures that Treasury are having in terms of the target of the 46 billion, and also to ensure that we don't fall into that situation that, or rather to say whether Eskom is going to make it or not going to make it. What is the practical that one can think of to say that, to avoid the worst in terms of not going there, in terms of making sure that the 46 billion, which is saying you can, the 58% is secured, but how can you avoid that we don't get there? Is there any measures or plans that practical one can look at?
Thank you, Honorable Yunus.
Thank you, Chair. Just firstly, your monitoring at Treasury and DPE of Eskom's daily finances and the trends that have emerged since this recent decision to take to make more money available to Eskom. What is it showing so far?
Can you share information with us, or is it too sensitive, market sensitive? In which case the chair can confer with you and find an appropriate way of getting responses to the concerns as a committee we would have, that there must be progress happening at the same time as the money is beginning to be given in tranches. Secondly, it seems to us, well, to me at least, that Mr. Freeman Nombalo is a good choice to have a CRO, but, you know, and we support the idea of a CRO and an office even more. Are there any tensions emerging between the established management there and the CRO could be seen as like an external monitoring agency or person? And if so, how are you managing that? Thirdly, obviously there's the urgent matter of appointing a new CEO and filling in vacancies such as they exist at the senior levels. What's the progress in that regard? Fourthly, this special paper, we hope, will address the many, many issues that preoccupy this and the committee in the National Assembly side, and in fact, most South Africans, right? We just don't want generalities. We want precise, clear way forward, very clear strategy with clear timelines, and very importantly, the financial position. And crucially, we would hope that that paper is negotiated with the trade unions. Otherwise, you're going to have the immediate response being by the unions that, well, we weren't consulted. And also, we take it that in some or other sense, this paper will also include the broader energy policy issues that arise from the fact that only today, I think there's an article on some online, I didn't read it, I just browsed through it, that there's going to be increasing divestment from coal. Many investors globally are beginning to retreat as you begin to get other sources of renewable energy and so on, cleaner energy. You know full well, more than us, how many businesses are going off-grid. Middle-class people who can afford to are going off-grid. So there's a large chunk of people, Comrade Che, who are currently or just been until now Eskom clients, customers, consumers, we're not coming back. Now, given the changes in the industry, given the changes in policies globally to take account of climate emergency and the receding value of coal, and the fact that so many people are going offline, as it were, we hope that this paper will also deal with all those issues. I think Dennis has covered me, and your response is reasonable to the 31st of March 2020 deadline. Ultimately, I think, you know, as members, most of us will agree with the last paragraph on slide 11, that it's like almost Eskom is systemically important. If it goes, the whole system collapses.
Thank you, Honorable Corinne. From my side, I would like to know, going back to that slide about the Chief Financial Officer. The Chief Financial Officer is the head of the restructuring office, and that office will need resources in terms of human. I have an interest in terms of what financial impact will there be in terms of establishing this office? Will it not take much on what you are giving to Eskom instead of, I don't know, I'm not saying it's not important, there's a need for the office, but I just want to have an understanding, and I have an interest in terms of the financial implication that is going to be there. I also want to know the terms and conditions under which the CRO is appointed. His term of office, or is it a he or she? It's Mr. Okay, he. His term of office. Is it contractual? What is the term of the contract? So that we can be able to know and monitor. The other thing that I want to talk to Team Finance and Department of Enterprise is that maybe we should do things in a different way. We know as a select committee on appropriation is not our mandate to deal with entities. It's the mandate of the public enterprise. But even when there's need for SAA, for DNL, for EVA, for funding, at the end of the day, those things need to come to us to process them. So I'm trying to come with a proposal whereby you give yourself enough time and look at the bigger picture and deal with them holistically and not come in piecemeals, special appropriation bills and stuff, and like we'll also lose some of the important things on the way. They will fall through the cracks and we might not be able to monitor them or oversight them. So that will be my plea, that we need to deal with them so that we understand the level of the problem that we're having as a country in terms of the SOEs and deal with them at a go. One other thing that I want to comment on is the conditions. Over and over again, I'm saying Eskom or whoever, conditional grant guarantees, bailouts should not just be given willy-nilly. No blank checks. There should be conditions. But I want to understand from you, Treasury, to what extent do you think this select committee and standing committee on finance and appropriation will have an impact on the conditions, and also considering all the stakeholders in this sector, their voices, because they are used to the environment. I want to understand that. Or do we just speak and take whatever that comes from you? Or are you going to consider what we say should be done? Because we have learned from experience and we want to contribute and help you as finance. You know, and we acknowledge that you know finances better than us, but our voice can add value into those conditions. My apologies. Okay, the SOEs have asked about it. The formula, you have explained that. That slide that speaks to the breakdown, the 23 billion and or the 59, yeah, when I'm adding all this that needs to be appropriated, I don't know, that needs to be given, is the 59 billion rand. So I just want to have an understanding as to where will this 59 billion rand come from? Where will we get this money as government? Okay. The roadmap that you're talking about on slide 10, I think as an oversight body we are interested because we are oversighting you but not be trying to be traffic officers or police, so that we make sure that you don't indicate right and turn left or indicate left and turn right. We have an interest in that stakeholder roadmap, and let all the interested parties or stakeholders be part of the development of that roadmap so that we get the buy-in. We don't get the resistance. There should be maximum support on the roadmap. The 23 billion rand that we said must be given at per financial year. Is it inflation rated? Will be informed by the inflation rate or what will inform it as the years goes by? Thank you.
Many of these questions, some of them legal, we have our legal, especially from the treasury, from the DPD, okay, so some of the legal, but we will talk to the contingency reserve, some modern of the trajectory, because this is really Eskom in the driving seat, remains in the driving seat in terms of the impact, what is currently happening at Eskom and where it is the trajectory. So I'm going to, just generally I want to just say that the paper, the special paper will talk to many of these issues, because it really is intended to be all encompassing, and in the context of a structural reform, not only of the entity, but of the sector, you need to adopt a challenging approach of how do you constitute a team. Approach, a team approach to finding a solution, and it is not an individual, and it is not one stakeholder. It is multiple. It involves multiple stakeholders, and so when the question chair that you asked, and what guidance, and to achieve an impact, what is a prerequisite for impact, because it's about how you can affect execution. It is not just about the condition, because the condition is not impact. It is how you affect execution that can be tangible and measurable. And so what comes to mind is absolute clarity on what it is we want to achieve. You must know, you need commitment to that goal, clear commitment, everyone buying in. You need absolute synergy by all stakeholders, multiple stakeholders, whether it's the trade union, whether it's the private sector, whether it's government, where the civil society, ESCOM itself, you need synergy, the energy sector minister, the finance, the relevant minister. You need to understand how to work together to break down whatever may be a barrier to translate your goals into action. So you need to understand how to break down whatever barriers there are, because it is part of achieving impact. And finally, you need clear accountability. Once you set yourself on a goal and you must deliver that, you need accountability in terms of being able to measure the execution of that objective over time to finalization. And that would be the role of the committee. And so that, there's detail around those that would be required in order to ensure that, firstly, the team you're putting together has execution capability. Are they capable of executing this plan? And then measure the execution itself. That is just by word of introduction and comment. But Robert, and then the team members would respond to the question. Thanks, Jack.
I'm trying to run this meeting differently. DDG, the questions that I'm raising, they come from the previous engagements, and I'm guided by the resolutions taken by this committee when we previously engaged with the enterprise and ESCOM and other stakeholders. That the, okay, Honorable Karim has spoken about the special paper, and we said it needs to be, as soon as it's published, we expect public enterprise to share that paper with us and the committee through the secretariat. I'm just reminding the resolution. As the committee, as members, we also expressed the need to convene a quarterly biannual joint meetings with the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise. Like I've just spoken about, the mandate that you have, but they have an impact on us, on our work. We also said that there's a need to underscore the implementation of necessary consequence management. The mechanisms and those consequence management will form part of the conditions, because we believe that people do things as they wish because there's no consequence management. But the consequence management must not only target certain category of people. If whoever is at whatever level, there should be consequence management, because as of now we have lost trust in the public. So trust is earned. For us to re-earn, remember at some stage people trusted ESCOM? So for us to re-earn that trust, we need to work together and do all these things that we commit to in the interest of the public. So I just wanted to remind you of the things that we have resolved on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So I'm gonna share the questions with my colleague from TPE, and maybe Martin can also just chip in as well in terms of the funding issues around ESCOM. Just to the Honourable Member Ryder on his question around the contingency reserve may be used, or the Appropriation Act. I just want to provide some detail behind the contingency reserve. I think the members would know that in the Feb 2019, Minister of Finance's speech, he did highlight that the contingency reserve will be increased by 7 billion to look at possible requests from SAA, from the SABC, and from DNEL. If you recall, a few weeks back, 1.8 billion was provided to DNEL from the contingency reserve, and as recently as I think last week, 300 million rand was also provided to SA Express. So basically what the contingency reserve allows the Minister of Finance to do is then to also to release funds from the contingency reserve. Now in terms of what the amount is in the contingency reserve, the amount that's available in the amount that was available at the beginning of the financial year was 13 billion, right? So obviously there are amounts that now have been that have been transferred to DNEL, to SA Express, to SAA. There's still a process that's going to be finalized in terms of amounts that will flow by the end of September, and then for SABC we're also in the process now of finalizing that transfer as well. So the Minister of Finance can then look at drawing from the contingency reserve, but obviously he's limited to what's available in the contingency reserve. That's one option. The second option is then to look at the Appropriation Act. Now the Appropriation Act, if you look at the Appropriation Act, it was enacted on the 6th or the 12th of last month. And basically what this also allows is for the minister then to appropriate funds for ESCOM, but here it's the timing issue. In terms of the contingency reserve, you can immediately draw on funds, limited to 13 billion. But in terms of the Appropriation Act, the earliest that you can actually draw funds from there is around December, January. So it's a matter of a timing issue as to when will ESCOM need the funds that's remaining for the financial year. So it's just a matter of a timing issue. So I think that's just basically just to look at, we have those two options available to look at the contingency reserve, but also we have the Appropriation Act where we can then funds can flow during December, January. In our daily liquidity calls, when we speak to ESCOM, we are of the understanding that I'm just going back to the slide here that's on screen, to slide number 7, is that ESCOM does have a remaining we do have 4.1 billion from the Section 16, which we can then still advance to ESCOM during the course of the next 3 months or so. And based on the daily calls that we have with ESCOM, obviously I can't disclose exactly who the funders are. I think it's market sensitive information. We are of the understanding that they will probably need the remaining 4 billion around about October, November. I see there's a nod from Martin, which is good. So we believe that there is no immediate requirement to draw down from the contingency reserve, nor will there be a requirement to seek funding from the appropriation as soon as December, January. So we are managing that with ESCOM and the Department of Public Enterprises on a daily basis, just to look at the cash flow. But obviously we have these options or these legal prescripts that are available to us in terms of when and how much we can actually draw down in terms of the funding that's available for ESCOM during the 2019-20 financial year. I think the other question that was raised by the Honourable Ryder was around the 46 billion. What does that comprise of? Just to be clear, this amount of 46 billion, it is after ESCOM has looked at its revenue projections in terms of its cost projections, in terms of what it can or have available to basically fund its operations. It also takes into account the cost containments that they have done. So any movement in terms of lower revenues or in terms of them not maximizing in terms of the cost optimization has an impact on the funding plan. So basically that is a net requirement after taking into account all revenues, all tariffs all cost optimizations and so forth. So that basically gives you to the 46, that brings you to the 46 billion in terms of exactly what is required in terms of the funding plan. Now obviously things do change, obviously, depending on what the, you know, what the economy is doing, you know, for the specific period of the year. If there's an up or a down, obviously it will impact the funding plan, and that obviously is something we're also managing on a daily basis together with ESCOM. So in terms of the you know, the question around the debt trajectory in terms of ESCOM, you know, I think the honourable, you know, writer mentioned that you see figures of 500 billion rand. I think our concern is that obviously if the debt situation of ESCOM is not arrested very soon, then we could have a situation where the debt will rise to much more than the 500 billion rand. And that's part of the work that the CRO is actually now undertaking, is to look at what options are available in terms of how do we deal with the ESCOM debt. I mean, there could be, you know, four options, maybe, or five options, but there could be a, you know, one option of where government basically looks at the possibility of taking some of the debt. You mentioned the 300 billion rand. I mean, those figures have not been finalized yet. I think that's still the work that's been undertaken by the CRO in terms of, if we do take over debt, what debt will it be? Will it be guaranteed? Will it be unguaranteed? What will be the implications for the lenders and so forth? The other option is, do we still keep on then appropriating additional funding per year? There's also another option of looking at creating a special purpose vehicle where we just put the debt into a special purpose vehicle and then government takes over the debt, or maybe the Treasury manages the SPV. And then there's the other option that we could look at, or the CRO is looking at, is do we then provide a loan as was provided a few years back to ESCOM. So those are some of the options that we're looking at. How do we then arrest the, you know, the debt trajectory, as you say, in terms of how do we arrest. But I think what's important to highlight is that while we arrest the debt trajectory and debt issues, the you know, the business model of ESCOM needs to be more robust, because you can't have a situation where we take over debt or we put it in SPV, but then you still have the same situation where you're not generating sufficient cash to service new debt that may arise. So you're back to square one maybe in 4 or 5 years' time. And this is part of the work that we're looking at in terms of the unbundling process and so forth. So how do we then restructure the business to ensure that that ESCOM doesn't come back to the fiscus and to taxpayers, in terms of requesting more funding. So I think that's work that the CRO will be doing, I think, together with ESCOM, DP, and Treasury in terms of the bonding process, and then also in terms of the options that the CRO is also looking at in terms of financial restructuring around the debt issues of ESCOM. I think the Honourable Writer also raised the question of procurement and how we are dealing with the procurement issues, and what is our view in terms of whether ESCOM is getting good value for money. In terms of what we've seen, you know, I think together with the Department of Public Enterprises, is obviously one of the key issues is around coal procurement and whether they are actually getting the, you know, good value for money in terms of that. That's something that we are looking at together with the DPE and with ESCOM in terms of, that's part of also the unbundling process and also part of the restructuring and oversight, is to look at how can we then look at renegotiating those, you know, those coal contracts. And I think the Minister of DP also mentioned that a few weeks ago, in terms of we need to seriously look at renegotiating some of those contracts at a more favorable level to, you know, for ESCOM. And we believe they're not getting value for money. I think, to answer your question, we believe they're not getting value for money. In terms of the question was raised around the daily cash flows. You know, I wouldn't want to disclose exactly what the actual cash flows are and who the lenders are. Obviously, these market sensitive information, but we do get very detailed information that's looking out 6 months to a year. So we have those detailed spreadsheets. I'm not too sure, Chair, we will have to look at how do we share that information if we are required to share that information with the select committee, but it's very market sensitive information, so we'll maybe want to maybe take that offline and see how we can discuss that. But I think for ESCOM's sake, I think we just want to be careful that we don't want to release something that's market sensitive in terms of when the drawdowns are for specific lenders. But just to give you comfort from the Treasury side and from DP side, we are looking at at the daily cash flows as we speak. In fact, there's a team now there that's this morning with the CEO, stroke chairperson, and with the CFO looking at the revised numbers as well, just to understand exactly what's required. In fact, CRO is also is engaging with the CFO and team and the Treasury as well. And the CRO is also having various roundtable discussions with independent parties around how do we also deal with the debt and also liquidity. I'm going to leave some of the CRO questions to Jackie, and also in terms of the CEO, I'll leave it to Jackie as well. The shareholder, DP is a shareholder. Chair, I think in terms of the I think the concerns that you raise around the conditions that are attached to the recapitalizations are of concern to us as a Treasury as well. I think we don't want to have a situation where we put these conditions and the conditions are not met, but there's no repercussions or no punitive measures. I think we are also looking, and together we are working with DPE on strengthening the conditions to be a bit more stringent, because we feel that at the moment we need to be a bit more firmer in terms of conditions around what will be the implications if these conditions are not met, and who takes responsibility, who is accountable for the conditions not being met. I know the DG of the Treasury did disclose some of the conditions at SCOA a few weeks back, but we are also working with the DPE just to strengthen the conditions. Just to share with the committee, obviously there will be pre-conditions, meaning that ESCOM will have to meet some of the conditions pre the transfer of the additional funding, and then also there will be post-transfer conditions that will also be attached to this, in terms of the appropriations. That we are working very closely with DP on that, and we hope to then formalise that when we do then finalise the appropriation bill, which becomes an act, but also then share that with ESCOM in terms of the conditions. Chair, we also share your concerns around what is the global picture around SOCs. I think we can propose from the Treasury side, and obviously my DG obviously will need to give the go-ahead, but I think from my point of view, from the Treasury side, we have the global perspective in terms of what SOCs are, how they're performing, or how well or not well they're performing. That's something we can also maybe, if requested to do, I think we can provide you with a picture in terms of the other state-owned companies. Because I did mention Denel, I did mention SAA and SABC. They have their own challenges, so there's something that we can also at a more convenient time, we can actually disclose and maybe discuss with you some of the concerns we have around those entities and what we're doing to arrest the decline in those entities in terms of funding and looking at restructuring the entities and things like that. I think it's appropriate that we do that to this committee. Chair, I think there's in terms of conditions as well, I think there's something that we're also mulling about at the Treasury is we should also look at a process of maybe disclosing these conditions to the public at some point to say we hold everyone accountable to that, and then the public knows these are the conditions that we are imposing on these SOCs, and these are the punitive actions that we are then actually recommending. That's something we can look at, and then obviously we can be judged on that as well, as you say. But it's something that we need to disclose that, I think, because obviously the conditions are disclosed in these committees and in the letters between the two departments or the entities themselves and in actual guarantee agreements or recapitalization agreements. But something that we can also look into in terms of disclosing some of the conditions. I think we're mulling over that in terms of the MTBBS that's coming up next month to disclose some of those conditions. So that's something we want to look at. And obviously we need the buy-in in terms of that. I just want to make sure that I'm addressing all the Treasury questions, and if I've forgotten anything, maybe Mr. Julius will just remind me. But in terms of the 23 billion per year, Chair, I think you asked this question. It's around the inflation. So basically, as Mr. Julius has highlighted, is that it's 23 billion per year over 10 years, that's 230 billion. And obviously, as and when we do the appropriation per year, that would be then adjusted for inflation. So that's something that we will look into, but as Mr. Julius has highlighted, that's nominal. So obviously, depending on the requirements per year, it will have to be adjusted for inflation. So that's just on the 23 billion. I just want to make sure that I have addressed everything. I think the CRO questions, as I said, special paper is for my colleague Ms. Molisani. Chair, I think the very important question as well is, where will the 59 billion come from? That's something that we in fact been busy of wrapping up the MTEC process at Mincombat, I think, is this week. So I think we need to look at, there'll be a combination of looking at how do we cut budgets. I think it was mentioned looking at 5, 6 or 7% over the next 3 years, and also to look at how do we then, if we cannot cut budgets, if we cannot raise taxes, then government will have to go to the market and borrow. As has been mentioned by Mr. Julius, that we will then need to increase our issuances per week just to account for the additional funding from ESCOM and maybe other entities as well. But I think what's very important, Chair, is that we've also, in some of the conditions and preconditions to the entities like SAA, SA Express, and ESCOM, is to also look at entities themselves, look at what non-core assets do you have as an entity that you can also sell. And we talked about, I think the DG mentioned it as well a few weeks ago, is about the ESCOM finance company. How much can that generate to also assist ESCOM and also assist the fiscus? So entities are looking and have come to, in fact, they have identified non-core assets to get rid of and to sell, but I must be very clear, it's non-core assets, not core assets. So entities that these are businesses that they don't believe will fit within their mandate. So we are looking at a combination of the entities selling non-core assets, looking at how does government cut budgets, where can we cut budgets, also looking at can we raise taxes? I'm not too sure. And often the worst case scenario is then to basically go and raise issuances per week and raise the debt level, which is not what we would like to see. But it looks like we're going to head that way in terms of then raising more debt if we cannot find savings within government departments and savings from within the fiscus. So I think, Chair, I just want to, I'm giving with a very dull ending on my comments, but I think that's the challenge we face, is that how do we fund this this debt? And obviously all cannot be funded from savings, but if we cannot cut, then we need to go back and raise more debt just to bail out some of these entities. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Ms. Molisani.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the question that you asked, in terms of getting the sense of the 7 SOCs that are falling within the DPE portfolio, we're quite happy to share with the committee in terms of what our assessments are and the funding requirements of those SOCs, so we'll actually furnish that. In terms of the question that you also asked around the implementation of consequence management, I think it's a very, very important point that you're actually raising, because in some instances, especially when people actually seen that they've been found, then they tend to resign. That should not actually absolve people from being, from action being taken against them. So it is important to actually highlight that actually resigning or getting out of an institution, it does not mean you're going to get away with it. We should actually follow a person irrespective of where they are, especially when they're actually been found wanting, especially with the issues that has to do with public finances. On the issue of the appointment of the CEO, that has been, in terms of the advert, it was closed, and I think the adverts the shortlisting has actually been done, so that will actually be presented to the minister, and then it will actually be tabled to cabinet. In terms of the special paper, we've been working on a special paper that will provide a clear roadmap for the end state of the energy sector, because you cannot just look at it just for only short term, but you need to look at the long term energy sector with what it is that needs to be done immediately, and also the steps that will actually be envisaged in terms of that. And also, Chair, the other question that it was asked, it was around the CRO. I just need to indicate that in terms of the CRO, the work has already started. You asked about the costs as well. Is that already the work has been, as government, as Ravesh just indicated, we as government have already looked at some of the options. So work has already been done. But however, the CRO will provide a clear picture of what the costs will be once they've actually interrogated all those options, and therefore indicate what it is that is required from Eskom perspective. So it will give an indication in terms of the people and the cost that will be allocated in terms of actually to realize what it is that the CRO needs to undertake. In terms of the primary mandate of the CRO is to actually develop the financing options of optimizing the balance sheet of Eskom. There has been appreciation that the restructuring of Eskom cannot happen without involvement of Eskom itself, but it will also need them as well. You cannot just look at the financing part and not looking at the operational part, because the two are very much intertwined. So you've got to look at it holistically so that you find a long-lasting situation, because you can look at the financing part, but if the operational part of it are not done properly, you find yourself in this particular situation. So that is important to have a very holistic view in terms of actually dealing with that. And in terms of the options that have been developed, it also takes into account some of the work that has already been done, especially by the presidential task team and the minister's task team on the turnaround strategy of Eskom. So it has to be all-encompassing. And the CRO is currently reviewing all those options. And as soon as those have been evaluated, then they will be narrowed down to what is actually viable and make a recommendation to government. In terms of Eskom, from a funding perspective, Chair, is that when you're looking at this entity, there are three sources of which you can actually fund this entity. It is through tariffs, it is also through debt, and it's through the government coming in. So what has been happening historically is that the tariffs that Eskom has been applying for, they've been less than what has been expected, and therefore it results in a funding gap. And also they go into the market to raise funding. And when all those three levers actually fail, that's when you find ourselves in a situation that you're in, that it now has to come to the shareholder to actually close that particular gap. So from a funding perspective of regulated entities, those are the three sources of funding or the levers that one can actually utilize. In terms of, I think I answered most of it. In terms of the CRO and what we've been actually having with the CRO, the National Treasury, and DPE, we're also getting ESCOM to be involved in that process so that we're all very much aligned, because the successful implementation of this is not just DPE or even the CRO, but it actually needs all stakeholders, and especially the buy-in from ESCOM to actually make sure that this actually does happen. The conditions as well, we are working very closely with a National Treasury to make sure that we're aligned in terms of what is going to be happening before the transfer takes place, and it's also afterwards, so that when you do monitor them, then we are very much aligned. There is no, Okay, that's definitely, I'm sure Ramesh will actually. And also even the feedback that we've been also getting even from last week in terms of what people are actually indicating, we're taking some of those as well into account, because you've got to, because you cannot be going to people and saying please support us and then you actually discard the very same concerns that they're actually raising. So it does not bode well for all stakeholders and actually the buy-in of everybody else. So we're actually very working closely together. We just need to finalize that and actually make sure that it's actually being implemented. And in terms of what else? In terms of the paper, as I indicated, that it will provide a clear roadmap of the state of the energy sector with what steps are going to be indicated, and then once that has been tabled in cabinet, then it will probably be shared with yourself. And I really think that's what I'm saying. That should be all inclusive. So in terms of that special paper is actually going to be tabled, and that will actually provide the end state, because it's not only an ESCOM issue, but it's the looking at the energy sector as a whole in terms of the reform. So it needs to get everybody else to actually understand that and actually see what is the roadmap or the implementation and what it is that is going to happen now in the short term, medium term, and long term. So from that perspective, it will actually be very clearly amplified.
I think Chair, maybe just to add on the conditions, I think I think what the proposal is that we also share the conditions with the Select Committee on Appropriation and the Standing Committee on Appropriations, so that we get the support of the committees before it actually gets imposed. Otherwise, if we just impose it without consulting with the committee, then it's going to be a problem. So I think it's a legal process that we must just check internally with our. I think the Minister of Finance will have to probably write to the committee. I'm not a legal person, but when we did speak to our legal team at the Treasury, because at the previous committee there was a thinking that the conditions be shared formally, with the committee, and obviously if there needs to be further conditions attached, or maybe amending the conditions, that's something we could look into. And I think the Minister of Finance can then write a letter to the committee chairs so that it's then shared formally before it gets imposed on ESCOM. Something we could look into.
Just to give some color to the conditions that we think about. And from the Treasury perspective, our concern and what is hampering, and the reason why rating agencies are so worried, right, about our rating, is the guarantees. So we have this huge portfolio of guarantees overall. They're from the biggest exposure. So the kind of guarantee framework that you want, that talks to the kind of conditions that we want, linked to guarantees, is that we want to set a limit for guarantee amounts, right? We don't want to exceed. There must be a certain appetite, because at the moment, our guarantee exposure has just been growing. So we think about a limit. Then we may have to think for a limit even for ESCOM and for other entities. We need to not be issuing guarantees for current expenditure, for paying salaries and, you know, borrowing and social projects. It must be for infrastructure. So we must understand when a guarantee is provided, link it to some infrastructure project. It must not be for operational purposes. There must be a reduction. Overall, if you want to measure the performance of station, you must then be able to see that the exposure is reducing. It must be increasing over time, right? Reducing the then, where we put conditions around appointment of a CRO, chief restructuring officer or chief restructuring officer is also meant to be accountable, right? Given certain roles and terms of reference, but must also account. And so it is important to also share the information in order to so that there is accountability. But when it comes to the budget that was presented in February, in the budget, 2019 budget report, with regards to SOCs generally, it was said that the following is required in order to turn around the current bad state of the SOC, the following, to restructure the business model. So you need to say, we need to see concrete evidence of an ESCOM that is restructured. We need to restore good governance. So do we have a board that has the competence and to have the skills for an energy entity or for an aviation, if it's SAA or any transport, do we have? If you're looking at the Prasa asset, do we have an entity that have strong internal financial controls? What does that mean? What is the internal audit? Is it functional? Do we have the right people? Are they reporting to management? If we talk about approved a reform of SOC reform, already approved, we have a private sector, a participation framework. Where, how far is, what does it involve? How is the partnership? With the costing of your developmental mandate, because at the moment the requests come very easily for funding and you are not able to establish whether the actual expenditure that is happening is for infrastructure or for development. Yes, we can fund development projects, but we don't want to fund the infrastructure because that must be funded by the entity, the revenues that it generates. So you want to separate commercial from development. And you want to, the board, you want to make sure you have the right board appointed. You want to make sure that you have the right remuneration and compensation and bonuses, because at the moment you just get requests irrespective of performance. Then the argument is we have a very good balance sheet of all these assets, but they're underperforming, but the balance sheet is big. Yes, it's a very big balance sheet. So on the basis of the balance sheet, you ask for bonuses. You should be basing the bonus on your income statement. Are you generating revenue to finance your... I'm just using as an example. Kinds of issues...
Performance, I think, should be the deciding weight, because when you look at the balance sheet, like what I've raised all along about the AG. When you get someone who can spin and twist the numbers, will give you a good report or a financial statement. Thank you. ESCOM last, want to come in?
Madam Chair, my name is Martin. I think most of the questions has been answered. There's just one or two things that I can maybe highlight. The issue around the 46 billion. So how do we determine the 46 billion? So when we do our budget, we look into what the market is doing and we look into what we believe the amount of money that we can raise in the market. And there are specific funders that we will actually target. Now some of the funding will be very specific. So in other words, we will get funding only to spend on a specific project, or there could be funding that we call the general pool of funding. So we have got a program, and we've got a whole department that runs it and see where we can get the 46 billion from. So that is their estimate, which they think they can actually go and raise and borrow out in the market, depending on the current situation. The question then was raised now, how do we see the future looking forward? The whole issue around EBITDA and that. We see that EBITDA will, over a period of time, will strengthen. However, there's a couple of issues that will impact it. Obviously, the one issue is the price that will impact it, and also what is going to happen with cost inflation. But as Jackie has articulated, the key is going to be to restructure the balance sheet of Eskom. How you do it and what is going to happen and when we're going to do it, we're not sure yet, and that is what we're busy unfolding through the CRO process. So that is the question. The other question is, and I quickly had to wreck my brains around, how did we go from 40 billion to 440 billion? Where did the 400 billion come from? And we must understand there was a couple of big projects that Eskom had to undertake. In 2008, when we realized that we were running out of capacity, we immediately had to bring the three stations that was very old, and we put it in mothballed. We had to bring those three stations back. Binkomati, Grootvlei, Camden. It was quite a lot of money. Then we built the pump storage that is in Van Rienen in KwaZulu-Natal. We built the pump storage there. We are busy with Kusile, that is close to the Maleni area, and we're busy with Madupi, which is close to Lepalali area. And then we also strengthened the transmission network. We had to strengthen the transmission network specifically around making sure that where we see the growth in the country is going to happen, that we can actually get the electricity down to those areas. And those were sort of the big projects that we actually incurred the money on, so that we that moved us from the 40 billion to the 440 billion rand. I can just say around the CRO itself that from an Eskom perspective, we meet with the CRO on a weekly basis. And what we do at those meetings, we take him actually through the business itself, so that the CRO doesn't have just an understanding of the finances, but also understanding of the operational business of parts of the business. And it's not done at a senior level. We bring in the experts to come and explain how the business works. Madam Chair, I think those are the questions that I had to answer.
Thank you so much. You want to come in again?
Yes, Chair. I have just one other issue around the cost in terms of where we actually find ourselves, in terms of what the colleague was actually indicating in terms of the coal procurement. That's where the cost is actually ballooned, in the sense that in terms of Eskom was not actually generating coal from where the coal was. So if you look at the transportation cost and the short-term cost, we're not actually looking at the cost plus mines. So in terms of that, that's actually where the big chunk of that cost is actually emanating from. So we actually have to review that in order to reduce the costs, both transportation costs and actually making sure that you actually mine where the coals are, so that you can actually reduce that from that perspective, so it will actually go a long way. And the other point, Chair, just the last one, in terms of what Honourable Karim was actually indicating, very correct to indicate that many of the banks are actually not funding coal projects, and they actually indicated that they want to fund more cleaner kind of technology, so it's going to be very difficult going forward to do that. So I think now with the IRP that is going to be tabled in cabinet in terms of what the energy mix is going to be, it's going to be very important to actually signal that, and also even the participation of probably Eskom going forward, because clearly it's going to be very difficult if they can continue saying that Eskom is going to be generating or rather building power stations from fossil fuel, so it needs to migrate into more cleaner sources of energy.
Members, are you answered or you want to follow up? Honourable Rider, second vice.
Thank you very much, Chair. I really appreciate the answers and also the candid nature of the discussion, so thank you. I just wanted to talk about maybe raise an issue. NERSA. We can't blame NERSA for not approving price hikes. They mustn't be seen as part of the problem. NERSA has a mandate to deliver on. And I just want to make it very clear that I don't accept NERSA being labelled as part of the problem. And personally, I never want to hear that in a meeting, because NERSA has a mandate to deliver on, and I believe they've delivered on that mandate, and they are to protect the consumer at the end of the day. And if they see that there are unwarranted increases coming through, they need to block those, and I think that's important. So that was a point I wanted to make. The next follow-up was just the gentleman at the back, and I think that massively valuable information, thank you very much. I listed through some of the big projects that you mentioned, and I just want to work out. So the funding that went into those, I think that the majority of them should have started showing a return on equity already. The only two that shouldn't be reflecting a return on equity would possibly be Madupi and Kusini, because they are not properly operative. The rest should already have had some impact. Are we seeing that impact already in terms of the returns coming in terms of lower cost realizations, or is that yet to be achieved? If you can just clarify on that one. There was only thing I really wanted to ask. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Rider, when you asked your initial question about the, is it allowed, is it legal to spend, something came to my mind, and as they were answering, I thought they would also answer that to say, I don't want to answer on your behalf. I might know the answer, but for the public to know and everybody who might not know, is it allowed for, you know, I know experience of this shifting of budgets and stuff, is the minister allowed to spend the from the contingency kit without consulting the committee? Is it allowed that he can spend that 13 billion that we see in the contingency plan, contingency budget? Eskom, you're speaking about this project fund, Revian. What's the name? The in KZN?
Ingula.
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 Okay. That project that you have developed, the Ukusile project, the Midupi, we have been assured by DPE that they will be finished by certain periods, and they made sure that they are safe. It might be before, but I'm still continue to say and re-emphasize those projects, those structures, those infrastructure projects, they must have maintenance plan. We don't want come 20 years down the line when we are no more here, our children are still complaining about the same thing, and they're being given the reason that is because of the infrastructure that is aging. You can't just build an infrastructure and not have, we have learned from those such mistakes. You must have plans. And I hope Department of Minerals, Public Enterprise, no, is the situation that, and my apologies, you'll understand. that I'm in now. Public enterprise, you need to make sure that those infrastructures, they have infrastructure plan. I mean, they have maintenance plan, so that we know the lifespan of each and every infrastructure project, because in the priorities of this government is that infrastructure development is part of the priority. We are investing in infrastructure. So we can't just invest in infrastructure that is going to be destroyed in no time. So investment is something that must come back, must pay back. Overall, I hear what you're saying. I've asked a question as to where will the money come from. So there will be budget cuts. And the budget cuts, you are robbing Dikeledi to pay Honorable Karim, and you are not solving a problem. You are going round in circles. I would like to give you a homework as a team to come up with an overall or a long-term or a permanent socio-economic solution. I know there's an economic paper that is in discussion. There's also a paper that we are awaiting that will come from the presidency. But as we live now looking forward, a long-term plan or a permanent solution on social economy, because when you cut from departments, you are not solving a problem, because the communities there, as much as you are resolving the ESCOM issue for them to get services that they are entitled to, or they pay for, some they pay for, we are still having problems for those who are getting services that are not paying. We are attending to that. But then you are not solving a problem where at KwaMhlanga we are always running short of water. Where KwaMhlanga community, Tebisile and Mabulol and JS Moroka has said for 20 years, more than 20 years back, said we need a rail, we need a train, understanding our situation. We still don't have, we're still talking about Moloto road, whatever, improvement. We still have roads that we can build while we are dealing with that to improve. But it looks like provincial governments are operating in silos. I'm talking about this Moloto road because it's a national issue, and I'm using that road on every day. When I go to town, wherever I spend my I'm contributing to the economy of Gauteng. That's my town. There are people who are my neighbors who are going to work every day. Students who are traveling to Gauteng, to Pretoria for school every day. So we are not resolving problems. So we must come with permanent solution and not resolve an issue because there's an uproar, there's an outcry to please people. Because that is not sustainable. Also, as you are indicating that the cutting of budgets from department, have you ever, maybe did it come to your mind that you might consider going to PIC? Let me not go further. I think you have heard me. Your reaction is just so that you have heard me. Have you considered going to PIC for money to resolve these problems that you have created? Yeah, let me leave it at that. Thank you.
On the PIC, The PIC is already invested significantly in ESCOM. It's actually the biggest lender in terms of its exposure, and therefore it becomes a big risk also
who were given the credit profile of Eskom, its impact now as an asset on the balance sheet of the PIC, right? And therefore, we are following the Party Commission, the inquiry, very closely, because there clearly would be recommendations that come from that process on how we utilize the resources. There's an interesting article in the Business Day today around alternative investments and how you can identify various financing arrangements for the more modern economy, and how you can utilize renewable and clean energy and the alternative investments associated with resources, whether it is in the gas fields of Mozambique or whether it is exporting energy into the region, because the market is not just the South African market. The market is much broader and beyond the borders of South Africa. There is a continent that is in need of energy, and there's also huge resources on the continent that has potential to provide energy. And there is also opportunities for investment by Eskom and others in African resources to provide energy to the continent, and in particular renewable energy, the water resource, the gas fields, etc. So, just as much of what is said is, what we are dealing with today is exactly why it is a very fascinating discussion, because it is about the immediate challenge. It is piecemeal. We are not providing here a comprehensive plan which is being worked at. And therefore, that is very important to have that picture. In the absence of a picture that provides the detail that is being asked for, we will be in the dark. And it makes accountability now very difficult, because what do you account for? Because that information is now not available, and therefore it is important. And so we will take that information back. End of the day is, we don't want to be cutting budgets, we want to be growing the economy. So this is an input, this discussion, into what is in fact required as structural reform for economic growth. Because Eskom is infrastructure, it's a contributor, it is a facilitator. Without energy, no investors will come and invest, because there's no energy to have the manufacturing, to grow the jobs, because the energy is unavailable. And therefore, Eskom is it performs a particular catalytic role. So it is into economic growth. Now, so then we can grow, and there can be more revenues, we don't need to cut the budgets. And that is an input. So, but on the follow-up,
on the infrastructure maintenance plan, before you
so
come in.
So the maintenance plan?
Oh, you come in, you want to come in. Let me give the gentleman.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Chair. I was Sir Ramuru. I'm coming not far away from Lotto Road. I appreciate that. But in terms of maintenance, as a department, we are currently having a 9-point plan in order to restore the generation capacity. We know that it's going to take some time, but also as part of shareholder compact, we contract them in terms of your plan maintenance. That's what we are doing, and also we are working in terms of, on the issue of unplanned. That issue we are managing it closely. We believe that asset management is one of the key. Once you build those big power stations, high cost, we need to be maintain them in order to make sure that they produce sufficient electricity. Thank you.
Okay, before I give to Eskom to talk to other issues, I wanted to ask. Okay, let me direct this. I'll come back to to Treasury, to ESCOM, given the paradigm shift towards the IPPs, what will be the input of the IPPs introduction in the already built infrastructure plant, and some of them, or even those that we are building today, I think is related to what I said earlier, and whether this paradigm shift will be sustainable. So here we're talking about sustainability. I also spoke about the long-term or permanent solution. Will they be sustainable for ESCO? Given the context cost of the entity plan amounting to 1.2 trillion. Okay, the last question that I wanted to direct to you, DDG, is the 23 billion rent that is planned for the outer years. I'm excluding this financial year that we are going to, that I said, is it inflation rate informed? And the answer I got, it got me unsettled, because I thought as economists and financial people, you can project at least so that we can know where we are going, where are we working on, at least to make us comfortable. You can make projections. That's what you usually do. Thank you. ESCOM, before the DDG, will be the last to speak on this, on the matter, if members are comfortable with the answer.
Okay. Chair, thank you very much. If I can start with the first question that was raised, the issue around, do we see the returns of those stations coming on? If we go back to the three return to service stations, that was the old stations that was in mothballed. The benefit was, at that point in time, the country was running out of capacity very quickly. And that was the quickest way of bringing capacity back on the system so that there could be growth in the country. So from a country perspective, yes, there was a benefit. Otherwise, you would have had to stop load shedding much earlier. The Ingula station, which is a pump storage station, now that is typically what we call peaking plant. Those are stations that you want to run in the peaks. Now the peaks is typically early in the morning and during the evening. Yes, and we run those plants, and it's a cheap option of peaking energy during those peak periods. So yes, you get the benefit from those stations. The issue around the transmission lines, why is it important to build the transmission lines? It is so that you can make sure that you can get the electricity to the areas where you need it. There's no benefit to the country if we produce all the electricity in the Mpumalanga area, but you need it in Cape Town. You have to get it from Mpumalanga to Cape Town, and that is why we needed to strengthen the transmission lines so that we can also take the electricity from there. So again, yes, there is definitely a benefit to that. Then the issue about the Dupi and Kusile, there will definitely be a benefit. There will be a huge cost benefit when those stations come on. Being big stations, you have got the economies of scales coming through those stations. So definitely there is a benefit coming out of it. The other question that was raised is the role of the IPPs coming in. And I think it is worldwide that you see these renewables start coming in. But one of the issues around renewables, if you take, for instance, solar will work during a certain time of the day. When there's no solar, you need something else to replace that solar with. And what is that something else? Can you replace it with something different? Can you replace it with wind? One of the issues with wind, specifically in South Africa, it is not that constant. You know, certain countries has got very constant wind, like in Denmark. Yes, they can rely on wind. In South Africa, the wind can blow very strong and within 5 minutes can die down. So what do you need now? You need something else to replace it. And that is what the white paper should try and address. What is that optimal mix for the country? We have got these big stations. We must also take into account that some of the older stations is coming to the end of their useful life. We have to start thinking about taking these old stations out. They can only run for 50 years, then they get to the end of their lives. And so we've got to think about that. And it's not South Africa only that has this problem. Other countries struggle with this whole issue. So I can see going forward, you've got to have a combination of renewables. You've got to have a combination of most probably fossil fuel. You will have a combination of your nuclear and other sources of energy as well. And that should be addressed in the white paper. The issue around the maintenance, I just want to confirm what Avasa is saying. We report to GPE on a quarterly basis, what we call the shareholder report, and in the shareholder report we give them detail around the maintenance, what we do. And usually with power stations, we've got what we call the life of plant plan, where we plan the maintenance and we plan the big outages, because with any power station, you have after a certain time, you've got to actually close it for a while you do big maintenance on that power station, replacing some of the key parts. So we do have life of plant plans, but we do work closely with Department of Public Enterprises around it.
Thanks, Chair. Let me just be clear on the 23 billion and what we then say. 23 billion per annum, and that's the projection. So when government announces an amount, that is a nominal amount, 23 billion. So that is the figure. What I think the committee need to understand is when ESCOM says this is what it requires, it works on a balance sheet that is an accrual, right? So it says valued today. When government works on its balance sheet, it works on a cash basis. It says this is the amount. So we're estimating 23 billion cash. If that amount changes based on an accrual for next year, then we will have to come and give a different nominal amount as cash. Yeah, just to make it clear, if today we say 23 billion, and this is to raise, and ESCOM raises debt of, say, inflation linked, and next year the inflation rate goes to 10%, that debt now grows at 10% because it's inflation linked. And now it has a higher demand. It will then come to change, because when we identified 23 billion, we assumed 6% inflation. We would then say now the nominal amount is higher because the accrual on the ESCO balance sheet is a bigger. I just want to make sure you understand.
Maybe before you go, Honorable Karen, I have a request before you go. I have a request. I want you to help Mr. Martin Bayse, how, as a Zulu man yourself, how to pronounce Mpumalanga. It's not Mpumalanga. So I want you to help him. It's Mpumalanga, not Mpumalanga. Sorry for interrupting you, TDG. You can go.
And I think for important for the committee to also appreciate, it works also in our favor when we have an asset that we bought. Let's say we bought foreign currency 5 years ago. I'm using, and you know, and you can 10 rand to the dollar. We record our $1 billion as 10 billion rand. If the rand goes to, we keep it because it's cash. When the rand goes to 15 rand, we still have 10 billion. In fact, we have 15 billion, but we keep it as 10 billion because it's cash accounting. I just want you to understand. So if we sold our dollar,
we immediately get 15 billion and not 10. But that's when you sell your foreign currency as an asset. Now, I was just trying to make it clear when we are saying 23 billion on the requirement for ESCOM in terms of its requirements. If on the liability side there's a deteriorating currency and they must service their currency at 15 rand when initially we thought it would be 10 rand, that then they would have to say, nominally we'd have to give more because the requirement is, you know, so just to be clear, on the entities they do their balance sheets on accrual. So it's marked to the current rates, whether it's interest rates or whether it's currency, it is what are the rates today. For government, it is cash. It is when you entered into the transaction, whenever you entered, those are the rates that we capture on our balance sheet. And so even in our guarantee exposure today, our numbers may not be the same as, even for ESCOM, as the number we get from ESCOM, because they would revalue, depending where the currency goes, where the rates go for the guarantee. For us, it is what was the guarantee provided at the time we entered into, you know, so that you understand the discrepancies that we can have between an accrual and a cash accounting basis. Now, you want to just the legal, I can't imagine things we do being illegal, contingency reserve. But that it was certainly legal. I think you're actually trying to explain that we don't exceed a certain limit because you can within that. But I just wanted to be, you know, elaborate on that.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think your question was around whether the Minister of Finance consults with the committee. So in terms of the contingency reserve, before any money is drawn down or used, the appropriation bill must be enacted. It must be an act. So basically, it has to go through Parliament, through the North, you know, to be enacted. Once that's enacted, then only can the Minister of Finance draw down on the contingency reserve. It's unlike Section 16 of the PFMA, where the Minister doesn't have to consult first. He just basically invokes Section 16 of the PFMA, like we did. For ESCOM and SAA, So basically, before the minister can even draw down on the contingency reserve, it has to be enacted by Parliament. Now, in terms of when he draws down, for example, he has then authorized the use of the contingency reserve for SA Express and for Denel. He has basically then, my understanding is he has to then to report, be it via, I think, public finance or be it via, you know, the budget office. I think there's a committee that they would then need to come back and report to then inform the committee that I have used I have basically drawn down from the contingency reserve. I'm actually trying to consult with our legal team from the Treasury just to make sure exactly what and when. But my understanding is that they will have to inform. As to whether they consult before invoking or using that, I'm not too sure. But my understanding is that at some point when he does use the contingency reserve, Minister of Finance does use the contingency reserve, there will have to be some form of reporting to Parliament in terms of what amounts have been drawn down against the reserve. Thanks, Chair.
Is that done during the adjustment periods only, or as and when that consultation that you're talking about?
Chair, I'm not too sure. I will have to get back to you in terms of the legal prescripts in terms of how and when that's actually then he informs the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't think it will take you more than 5 days to do that consultation through our secretariat, because we want to also be clear. And I'm asking this also because in my experience there's been such problems. Sometimes when there are disasters that are happening in the country, we need to look at what the PFMA is saying in terms of the amount that is allowed to be spent or shifted. we wouldn't have the luxury of time to can process those amounts through the bill. We must know where our mandate starts and ends, so that we don't find ourselves fighting with the Treasury or the executive unnecessarily, or not knowing. Members, I think we've exhausted all the questions. Are you satisfied with the answers that you... We are fine. Let me take this opportunity, members, to thank you very much for being in this meeting and engaging. And I think we have one item outstanding. I'm going to allow our guests to leave, and then we deal with the last item, which is minutes. Can I request Honorable Karim to please come here so that I can just rush to where you come from, please?
We will have a quorum, Madam.
Follow the leader.
How many do we need for a quorum?